This is the second episode of Rebel Rat Records. I'm here with Ian Jackson, known as Jacka, Jacka Frost, Jacka Sparrow, Splatter Jack, Jacka Splat, and the man of many nicknames.
Jack-o-lantern.
On Halloween. Jack-o-lantern on Halloween. So thank you for doing this today. So I think I'd like to start getting the ball rolling now. What actually got you into punk?
I was camping as a kid, 12, 13 year old, through Hexham. And there's a guy in the campsite walked past with a plastic bag on with safety pins in it. And he was singing Go Buddy Go. And I didn't know what the song was. I didn't know what he was all about. But whatever it was, it just blew my mind. And I just couldn't believe it. I mean, I'd never heard this song. I just heard this guy singing it. But the song stuck in my head straight away. And I don't know why. And I don't know why. He just looked great. And yet he was probably not even being serious. He just had a black sort of bin liner with safety pins in. And he was singing that, you know. And I'm like, what's this like? What's this? It's class. So, weird. But, yeah.
So, you know, aside from that, what sort of age did you seriously get into punk? Was it quite a young age?
13.
13?
Yeah.
So very, very early teens.
Obsessively into it. It wasn't just a passing thing. It was like, probably like what somebody is into games now, you know. Like, I was so much into The Clash that my mum wanted to take us to hospital, like to a doctor.
Really?
Because she thought I was a serious problem, like, because that's all I thought about. That's all I talked about. It's like, Clash, 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 Clash. Everywhere
clash.
She looked, I wrote it everywhere. I had to scroll it everywhere. I'd let me have a sacket for schools, like, all my books are covered in it, everything. I mean, I was obsessed, you know.
Right. So was a Clash album your first sort of punk record, or
no,
was it?
No, the first record I bought was All Around the World by The Jam, because I saw them on Mark Bolan. But not long after I come back from this camp, it was kind of like, I think it was, it'll have been August, late August, maybe September-ish, 77. And I saw them on there, and it was just unbelievable. So I went out and bought that. And then the week after, I think Generation X were on. Your Generation, that was the second single I bought. And I think after that was Burnt Down Rats, Don't Have Number One. Then Eddie and the Hot Rods, I think. And then the Radio Star. I just kept buying the records that were
it's
on
just
every
one
week.
After another.
Every week this programme was on, there was a punk band on, and I just thought every record was great. And then I remember my mate bought Complete Control from Woolies for 30 pence. And I'd never heard The Clash at this point, but he played it. And I was like, wow. And he played the B-side, the both sides. I just thought it was the greatest thing I'd ever heard. And I had to have that record. And then on the Christmas, I think I got the Modern World album. And then that was the only album I had at the time at that point. And then after that, I think I must have got the Bollocks next, and then the Clash first, and then the Buzzcocks first album when that came out, and so on. And I remember Christmas 78 getting Generation X debut and Love Bites by the Buzzcocks and so on. But I was buying records all the way through 78 more than anything, like, and late 77.
So when you got that legendary Sex Pistols album, you know, what did you think of it when you first heard it?
Well, it was actually, it was Bonfire Night 77. I remember being in the car with my dad, because he took my sister down to see this bonfire down at Barnes Park. And I was just sitting in the car, and my mate was walking up the street, and his brother was older than us. He was like 18. And he bought it, and he just ran up the car, and he went, "You're not going to believe it. My brother's bought the Bollocks." And I just remember saying to him, "Is there any swearing on it?" Because that's all I was caring about. And he went, "Oh, you've got to hear Bodies, you won't believe it." And then I went around his house, I think, the following week, just played the whole lot, and it was just like, wow, unbelievable. I'd never heard God Save the Queen by this point, because you couldn't hear it, because it was banned, you know? So
yeah, it was banned actually, all over the place.
I never actually heard it. I only heard Pretty Vacant and Holidays in the Sun, because they were the singles, like, after that, you know?
Yeah.
I couldn't buy God Save the Queen. It was quite rare to get. So I didn't have that till about a year later. I'd never even heard it at that point. And I'd heard Anarchy when it first came out, because my cousin bought it. But you're talking about when I was like 12, 11 going on 12, like.
Aye.
I've probably just turned 12, and I just been into Shawaddy Waddy and things like that. I wasn't really impressed with it, like, you know. So like, it took about a year to get into it properly.
And then, you know, the Pistols' lyrical quality, you know, all the swearing and like all the meaning behind it. Like God Save the Queen, for instance, right. You know, when you first heard that, what did you think? You just thought, like, oh my God.
Well, I just, my mum went ballistic, like, because I bought it and she saw us buy it. And she threw all my records down the stairs. She went ape shit. She says, you can't. I don't want that crap in my house, you know. she got all my records. And about, at that point, you're talking about sort of, when I bought it, it would have been early 78 by the time I got it. So I had a pretty stack of singles, you know, about probably 50 singles. And she just threw the lot down the stairs. Like,
bloody hell.
I was in tears, you know, just crying my eyes out. But it never broke. They just landed and I put them back in the thing. And I never thought of it as offensive. I just thought it was just fun, you know. I liked it. I wasn't interested. I never got into it because it was like rebellious. I got into it because I liked it. I just loved the music. I loved the way they looked, you know. So
what was your sort of opinion on the look that they had? Sid Vicious with the spiky hair.
That was what goes into it. I just loved it. I've never seen anyone look like that before, you know.
Right.
I mean, you got to remember the 70s. Most people just looked like they all had long hair. Everyone had long hair, apart from older people who had short hair, but no one had a spike. I'd never seen a spiky haircut in my life, you know.
Aye.
I was like, what's that? I mean, I saw Billy Idol on as well, you know, and I just thought it was amazing, you know. And tight trousers. I'd never seen people wear tight trousers, really, because you couldn't get them, you know.
Aye.
Because, you know, bearing in mind I was only like 13, all I'd ever seen was kind of like Oxford bags and Dr. Martens and people in horrible tracksuits and things, you know. I'd never really seen anything that looked like what they looked like.
Aye.
It was just like alien, it was, you know. Amazing at the same time.
Right. So, 1979, post-punk comes into play.
Well, post-punk comes into play pretty early, like 70.
Well, even a bit further.
I mean, Pill were the kind of first post-punk band, really. And that was quite early, like 78, you know. And when Public Image came out, it was awesome, you know. What a song, you know. Mm. Brilliant.
And obviously, with you being into like the Pistols and things like that, did you get into post-punk easy? Or
it's just a natural progression for me, like, because I think everybody moved on pretty quick. I mean, if you listen, even by 78, punk became like, it was Top of the Pops stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Most of it. Everything was on Top of the Pops that was anything, apart from the Clash and that, you know, because they refused to. But the Pistols split, you know, pretty much straight away when I got into them, you know? I mean, it seemed a long time when you were a kid. They seem to have been around for a while, but you've got to bear in mind, I only got into them in sort of the August, September-ish, and they will finish by the January, if you think about it that way.
Yeah. Know?
But the Clash were like me thing anyway, so by 78, the Clash just ruled me world, you know, and all the great records came out in 78, you know, all this X-Ray Spec stuff came out in 78, all the Buzzcocks great singles came out in 78. Most people didn't have an album until 78, really. There wasn't that many albums out in 77. I mean, obviously, Stranglers and that had two out. The Clash album came out and there's Bollocks. There wasn't much else in 77, you know, really. 78 was the main thing when the Gen X album came out, the Buzzcocks album. Well, the Damned had two out in 77, but everybody hated the second Damned album. I loved it. Like, I don't know. It was just because it was the first one I heard. But I thought like Problem Child was a brilliant single.
Now with the Clash being like, you know, the accordingly the band that only matters, and all this thing, do you like every single album they've brought out?
Nah.
Do you hate the most?
At the time, I was absolutely really disappointed with London Calling. I thought it was awful.
Really?
See,
I'm completely opposite. I absolutely love London Calling.
You've got to take from the perspective of growing up with a Clash, though, when you had, like, as you're buying song by song, right, you're waiting for the next great song. I mean, Complete Control blew my mind, the sound of it, and the power. And they just gradually got... I mean, I remember thinking White Man was rubbish when I first heard it, because it was like, what the hell's this? Because when I first bought the Clash album, I hated, like, Place and Thieves, you know? I wanted to hear punk rock. I wasn't interested in the slow stuff. I grew up to like it, and then Give Enough Rope, I thought it was a great album, because I love that stuff. But then I had like Clash City Rockers, which I thought was great at the time. White Man at the time, I wasn't totally convinced at first. Then I had Tommy Gunn, English Civil War, and so they were all singles that I liked, you know. But then they brought I Fought the Law out. And I was like, hold on a minute. And you bear in mind, I'm only about 15 at this point, and I'm thinking, what's this like? This is a bit of a sellout. Like, what's this? It's like poppy and like a pop record, you know?
Yeah.
I kind of liked it, but I thought, it's a cover version, why are they doing that, you know? I was a bit kind of off-put a bit by that. And then when London Calling came out, I'd never heard it, but I went to the town, I bought the single before I'd even heard it, and I put it on. And I was like, my God, what's that like? I just thought it was weak. weak, no like power to it, you know. And I was a bit disgusted by it, really. And then I got the album, and I just, it's like, it's terrible. It's like, I really hated it. It took us ages to like it. And I still don't rate it, like, I don't rate it that much.
Yeah, I mean, like, compare it to Complete Control, and, like, when you just, you hear the intro and you just know that it's like...
There's nothing like the first, that period, that's where the Clash peaked for me, and they were never as great as that ever again, like.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, look, I was obsessed. I loved them. I know everything about them, probably, you know. I've read so many books about them, but as you get older... I don't appreciate them as much anymore, you know. I kind of think they probably weren't as good as what I think they were, you know. I mean, I love the first album, didn't get us wrong, it's been one of my favourite albums of all time. And the same with Rope, I like it, you know. I love the stuff on it, but especially the later stuff, Sandinista I think is better than London Calling, in fairness. But I couldn't stand the 80s stuff. I thought that Combat Rock was garbage. Can't stand it. Absolute rubbish. It's just not what I'm into.
That's the one that I should ask you. Should I go on, isn't it?
That's just not the sound I want to hear from the band I like, you know.
So. While I like that song, I think when you've heard it so many times, it just gets so boring.
What the Casbahs are, right? It's not crap. It's just not a punk song. It's not guitar music for me. It's like, I want to hear, like, I like bands who make a sound, you know. And the Clash had a sound. They just eventually just filtered away to, like. There was nothing distinct about them to me,
Drifted away from punk.
Drifted away from the idea of what they had. A great sound, they were just a great band originally, like. I like the look of them as well, then, of course, they stopped looking like they used to look and became more teddy boyish.
Aye.
Which was a bit off-putting as well, you know. But
so you know, growing up as a punk, did you want to get into a band and play punk music?
And that's what goes into guitars, you know. As soon as I saw, you know, the have you got this Bollocks picture disc thing?
Have
you seen the picture on there? There's a picture of them on stage, the Pistols and that. I remember seeing Steve Jones on there with that black Les Paul, and I just thought, I want that guitar. And I bought one from like a catalogue or something. I was like 15, and I just thought, I've got Steve Jones' guitar, even though it wasn't, you know. It was a cheap copy, like, but... And that's what got us into it. Just hearing them bands, you know. I just wanted to play it straight away.
You sort of idolised Steve Jones quite a bit.
Steve Jones and Mick Jones, you know. I just thought... I've got a picture of the Clash, which I got in a poster magazine, and I remember seeing the picture of Mick Jones in there and just wanting that Les Paul Junior. I didn't even know what kind of guitar it was. I just knew I wanted one of them.
Yeah.
At the time, I just thought, that looks great. I've got to have it.
So when you know, you got into bands, what were some of the bands you actually got into?
Well, everything to do with punk at the time. I mean, I just bought everything punk in 77, 78, but by like 79. It was kind of like, there was a mod revival, you know, and mod was, and I know people think mod's different to punk, but really, it was just an extension of it, really. All them bands like the Purple Hearts and the Chords and that, they were just punk bands with suits on, you know. They still had the same attitude, they still sounded the same, they're still fast kind of songs, you know. So I kind of drifted towards that a bit, you know. It was like, you know, you bought music papers and you just were influenced by what was going on, you know. And there was, like, obviously you had Joy Division as well and bands like that. So you had this kind of post-punk things, like, I mean, the Banshees, they weren't really punk by the standard of punk.
I think that people saw them as, like, more of a...
They're like the first goth band, really.
Yeah.
In a way. But, I mean, the Scream's one of my favourite albums. Like, I think it's amazing, like, and I still stand by it. It's probably one of the best albums of that period. Brilliant. And I love that. So I love the Banshees. But all the way through loving Maud, being, you know, into Maud and having me Parker and all that crap, I still used to wear a Clash badge in me Parker, you know, because I couldn't let go of the Clash, you know, no matter what. They were still, like, me idols, you know.
Yeah.
And Joe was God. and blah, blah, blah. But I still bought, like, post-punk stuff as well as mod stuff, you know. But the turning point, really, where I turned from, like, not just liking punk was... I was kind of hearing U2 for the first time. That was what changed it for us. Mm. There was a kid in my street who was a bit younger than me, and he used to find all these obscure bands, you know. He said, oh, have you heard this? Have you heard that? And he's into bands like The Wall, like kind of obscure punk bands and that. And he discovered U2 really early on, and he lent us the first album, you know, and it just blew my mind. I'd never heard anything like it. And they were kind of as inspirational as what the Clash were, it was, you know. Mm. They kind of made us want to play differently and listen for other things, you know.
Yeah.
So
what did you form any bands around sort of 79 and...
1980, we had a band called The Noise.
The Noise.
And we did like 3 gigs. And Cass was in the band, he was a drummer, like. And I've got a live tape of us somewhere. And I've got a practice of us, like a rehearsal of us as well, like, you know.
So did you just do covers or was it like your own original material?
No, we did a couple of our own. I think we had 3 of our own songs and then the rest was like, we did like Pretty Vacant and Right to Work by Chelsea and For My Company by UKDK. So kind of it was punk and post-punk, so it was UKDK and Gang of Four and the Mekons, who were kind of like later in the day kind of bands from 79.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of were like, we were punky and post-punky at the same time. Like,
yeah.
Just kind of the time, really.
Right. You know? I remember you telling us quite a while ago that you were in a band called The Chair.
Well, it was Judas Chair, which Judas started Chair. In 1989. And that was just an idea that, because by this time, and I know people will probably tell us I'm talking about me, but punk had died, like, you know, and I'm not joking. There was nobody. You never saw people walking around punky and you never heard about it even being mentioned, you know. So we decided to do this thing where we do a thing called the New Wave Revival. And we couldn't even call it punk because if you use that word, it was just frowned upon as being like so out of date and old fashioned and rubbish and no one wanted to know, you know. It was. So we did the thing, we got this band together, which was originally members of The Noise, me, Cass and Gibber, as a 3-piece, and started gigging as that band, you know, and it wasn't even a punky name, you know, it was a stupid name when I think about it. But then we did some gigs and people who kind of started to come out the closet a bit, you know, but not like they do now. I mean, punk now is massive, like, it's bigger than it's ever been now, but in the wrong way to me, like, because some of the bands are absolute cack, you know. And the Noise is because I think as time goes on, history will look back and say, well, that's what punk sounds like, you know.
Yeah.
Unlike Han Ratty or something, which is sadly the first Clash album, is it, you know?
Yeah.
And that's, I don't want the original punk to be like diluted into this comedy crap which is going about, you know, like, I don't know, like, what they call it, like, you know, like Unlike Han Ratty and Spunk Volcano and all these bands, and what's that other one? What's it called? Dreadbuck Disco and all that. I mean, they're just, it's like comedy. It's comedy stuff.
Yeah.
Why is it comedy, you know? I like serious bands, they have serious things to say, but saying that, I don't like metal bands either, and a lot of them sound like metal bands to us, because it's just played too fast, you know?
Well, bands like Discharge and DRI, things like that, they took on metal quite.
Well, you've got to remember that the original bands weren't copying off anybody because there was no one to copy off, was there?
Yeah.
So all their influences were like 60s bands, probably, like, you know. So that's why you get the kind of sound of what it is. It's rock and roll, you know, at the end of the day. It's like a rock and roll thing, isn't it?
Mm.
But the bands who came out in the 80s were just copying the punk bands. So they're taking this punk thing, but taking it to the extreme, you know. I mean, I hated the Oi stuff, you know. I remember Cass bought Discharge's first single. He put it on and I was like, Jesus Christ. I hated it, you know. And I heard the Exploited on Top of the Pops and I just thought, bearing in mind I was 15.
Yes.
Maybe 16 at the time. 1981 would have been 16-ish, going on 17. I just thought they were like, I thought they were taking the piss out of the book. I just thought it was like, I just thought it was stupid. It was like, why are you doing that? It's almost like they were dressing up for a fancy dress party. Like, that was just beyond, because punk had come so far since then, you know? All the original bands had moved in this other direction. And suddenly there's all these people who were probably too young to be around at the time getting bands together and making it really like, taking all the silly bits and making it like, you know, kind of blown out of proportion, you know? So I didn't like it, like, you know? I was curious, and I still used to buy things. I used to buy the Punk Lives magazine and things just to read about it, because I didn't want to. I kind of didn't want to let go, you know, in my heart, because it was in my heart. You know, I loved it, like, but I just couldn't find bands I liked from it. They were all like, they were just inferior versions of the original bands to me. Like, so there was more kind of post-punk bands doing better stuff, you know.
Is that why you got like more into post-punk than you did of sort of like 80s punk?
Well, it's me, you know. If you think about my age, you know, I think I was probably too young. I couldn't go to gigs when I was 13, 14. I was too little to get in, you know. So, my time for going to gigs and discovering things properly was like you know, in the early 80s, you know. And then by that time, I was into, like, Bauhaus and The Cult and The Cure and all them kind of, like, gothy post-punk bands, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my thing, really. And The Alarm, I love The Alarm. I saw The Alarm support you too, and they just blew us away. They were amazing. I thought they were like The Clash, you know.
And sticking with gigs, did you ever see any of those bands, like The Cure and...
I never went to see The Cure, because I kind of quickly went off them, because I liked the early stuff, which was 79 and 80. So by the time I was old enough to go to gigs, I kind of didn't really get to see them. So I went to see The Cult and The Damned. I mean, my earliest gigs were like The Damned, The Cult, U2, The Alarm, kind of all them bands of that period, New Order and all them kind of like really early post-punk bands, you know. But when I did, I went to loads of gigs at that point in time. I can't remember half the bands. There's so many, you know. But and The Chameleons and bands like that were I was into, you know. Just things that sounded different. I was just always looking for this different guitar thing, you know. That's what mattered. It was like, I wasn't really interested in bands trying to plod like punk anymore. I mean, I can't even remember anyone doing it. I know people talk about the scene in the 80s, but I don't think there was a scene, like, especially around here. I mean, there might have been, but I didn't even know about, you know.
Yeah.
But I don't remember it. I don't remember anyone talking about it or even getting involved in it. So if it was there, it was pretty much underground, you know. So.
And with them, obviously, gigs that you've been to, were there any bands that you wanted to see but you didn't get to see?
Well, I could have went to see The Clash in the early 80s if I'd wanted to. But I kind of thought, by the stuff they were doing at that point, I wasn't really interested in seeing them, but I probably should have went, you know. And I should have went to see The Jam on the last tour, because I didn't go and see them either. And went to the sound check in 1980 in the City Hall, and we got into sound check, seen the sound check, and I didn't have tickets for the gig that night. And I think they only did another couple of gigs in Newcastle after that, and then I split up, you know. I should have probably went to that as well. But it just didn't go, you know. But did see some good things, you know, some great stuff, like early days of The Cult and stuff like that, and Big Company when they were like, you know, they were just, the Skids had just split, and when New Anderson was getting a new band together, and they played Dingwalls, you know, that was about 82, and they were just brilliant. But there's about 9 people watching them, you know. But they're the kind of gigs I like. I like to be there, like, on my own, just discovering these little bands, you know.
So obviously that was in Newcastle, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Was Newcastle quite like a punk sort of location?
Well, no. I mean, I've talked to people since. Everybody reckons Sunderland was the punk town, like, and Newcastle was always the heavy rock place, like. I think it's because of the Mayfair was a heavy rock venue, you know?
Yeah.
And that was where most bands played. Sunderland was always the punkier thing, like, I think. When you talk to people from different areas, like Bolden and Shales and that, they said, oh, Sunderland was where punk was, you know? Because they had the 29, and that's where the Upstarts flourished and Toy Dolls and that. Whereas Newcastle didn't really have a punk band, you know?
Yeah.
As such. They didn't have a famous punk band, you know? Make any think of one from Newcastle?
Red Monkey, not a very famous band.
Penetration were classed as a Newcastle band, but they weren't really. They're from Durham, you know? So, I don't know, it's hard to say. Like, there wasn't really any... I mean, Sting's from Newcastle, isn't he? He's the Police. I mean, the Police, again, another band who I thought were quite... I thought were great, the first few singles and that. But then they soon became this... I don't know. I think they became big, and I think that kind of put us off a bit.
Yeah.
I used to like bands when they got famous. Kind of, like, turned me back on them once they became huge, you know?
Sort of went against what punk was about, really.
Well, it's like... I loved U2 when they were just little, because I was seeing them in small places, you know, and I loved them, you know. I loved them, like, it's hard to describe because they're such a poncy band now, but they were just a great band, like, and then they became awful, you know. Like,
yeah.
Pretty quickly, like, by 83, I was kind of starting to hate them. It's a bit like The Clash, really. All my bands who I've ever loved did it to us, you know, they all do it to us. Start off great, and then they're just like, what are you doing? Stop it. Stop turning crap, you know. What's happened to all my bands? I mean, I didn't see much with The Jam. I mean, The Jam kind of kept it together for a while. I think Setting Suns is a brilliant album. That was their fourth album or something, you know, and it's still brilliant. So it wasn't really the 80s. The Jam kind of became a bit sort of, they were getting too dancey, you know.
Yeah.
And I kind of lost interest, really. When they did the last single, like, Beat Surrender, it's just like, it might as well be a Motown single. It's not that I think it's crap, like, it's just not the kind of Jam that I like. But, you know,
I like guitar.
guitar bands, and they're not really, weren't really a guitar band anymore.
With Paul Weller and Bruce Foxton, you know, like very, very good guitar players, I'll say that.
Yeah.
Like, you know, when they're on the stage and, you know, Paul Weller's like, what did you think of that?
The jam jumped about a lot, and I love that. I mean, that's kind of what attracted us to them, the fact when the first time I saw them, I'd never seen a band jump in the air. I mean, like, when Foxton
does like the splits in the air sort of thing, doesn't he?
And like Weller doing that. I mean, it's obviously, if you were a kid, you probably didn't realise that he was just copying off The Who, you know?
Yeah.
But I didn't know that, you know, because I'd never seen The Who. I didn't know The Who were, you know? Mm-hmm. At that point, I probably, in fact, now I wouldn't have known who The Who were, you know? Mm. I think I might have known them from Tommy. Probably didn't know them from Tommy, but The Who and Tommy are not The Who of the 60s, you know?
Yeah.
So I probably wouldn't have even thought The Jam or anything like that, you know? Mm-hmm. But when I saw Weller and Foxton jumping in sync, you know, I was like, that's fantastic. Like, you know, it doesn't matter about the music, it's about what they look like. You know? It's always been like image over content for me. Anyway, like in a lot of cases, you know, I love bands with images. Like, they've got to have one. That's what's so crap about music today, because people don't wear stage clothes anymore.
Mm.
You know, I mean, like, we're just talking about this the other night. I mean, look at Ed Sheeran, right? Like, compare him to like something like Elvis, right? Now, Elvis has got an image, whether you like him or not. I'm not a fan of Elvis, but he's got an instantly recognisable image,
yeah,
his clothes, how he projects himself, you know? Like the Beatles, like the Pistols, like Adam and the Ants, like anybody, or Bowie, or Bolan, or anybody from the past, they've all got this kind of stage thing, and like this magical thing that draws you in as a young person, you know? I just don't think people have got that anymore. I mean, you know, Ed Sheeran might as well be the kid from across the road who's delivering the papers or something. He's just, he hasn't got the X factor for me. Like, and as time goes on, when people look back in time, you know, and they'll be saying, these are the pop stars of the past. And you've got this little ginger kid who plays guitar who looks like Nout, you know? He's just got nothing. You don't just, where's the inspiration to copy him, you know? That's the thing. Like, where do you want to look like him?
Mm.
You know, how many kids want to look like Ed Sheeran?
Aye.
You know, I mean, I want to look like Joe Strummer. I want to look like Johnny Rotten. I want to be like these people and Billy Idol because they look cool, you know?
So do you think having like an image in a punk band's like a key?
I think it's essential in every band.
A key part.
I think it's essential in every band. It's people, you know, when people say, it's not about how you dress, it's not about this. Who said it's not? Like, they say it's not. I say it is. I say it totally is. It's what divide. It's what creates that culture. It creates, like, you know, it's that divide between, it puts you in like that thing, you know, you're part of a gang, you're part of something that isn't like something else, you know?
Yeah.
So you identify with that kind of thing, you know? And I love that. That's what I love about, that's what's great about, like, that's what was great about music. It defined an era, and eras are important, you know? And we haven't had that for a long time, you know? I mean, I think the last sort of band who made any massive impact was Oasis, and they didn't have an image.
Mm.
You know, they look like Jarvis, like, to me. That's what put me off them, you know? I mean, I don't dislike their music. I think the first album's kind of okay, you know?
Aye.
But when I saw them, I didn't like how they looked. They're not inspiring to me. They just look like, I think they appeal to, like the lower common denominator, people without a brain, like, to me. I mean, I'm not joking. If you go to the gig, I've been to see them, you know? And it's just full of thickies, like.
Thickies.
Well, I'll call thickies, you know?
Thickies.
It's not intellectual,
mm-hmm,
on any level, you know. People might think punk is, but it is, you know.
Aye.
I mean, you know, a lot of clever people in punk rock. They all came from, and that's another thing about punk. People think it's a street thing. It's a council estate working class thing, but it's not. It's not. It's not, man.
Mm.
That's not where it came from. It came from the art schools of London, you know.
Right.
That's where the Pistols were from. I know Steve Jones wasn't, but Rotten and them were, and, you know, and Mick Jones was, and they're all trying to copy their heroes from the 60s who had all been in art school, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And Generation X was the same. It was all about, they all sat down and worked it out, how they wanted to look, how they wanted to sound. It was all a plan, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like, it's not just about just picking up a guitar and just bashing out three chords. It's more than that, you know. It's clever, and it's got to have intellectual, there's loads of I mean, there's a lot of humour in punk, you know, but it's done with, like, intelligence in mind, to me.
Yeah.
And that's what I like about
it. It takes, like, planning to an extent.
It's lyrically, it's clever, you know. A lot of it's really clever. And it mightn't be, you know, it mightn't be as testing musically as some, you know, like progressive rock or something like that, but that's not what it's about. It's about instant 3-minute hits, you know, and but being clever about it and looking cool. That's why I like things like Generation X. I always thought that they paid a lot of attention to what the war, you know, and how they present themselves and that.
Yeah.
And how they present artwork's important. I mean, the Pistols have got everything, haven't they? They've got the look, they've got the art, they've got the sound. They're just a one package of amazing thing, you know.
Aye.
And that's what's great about it. There's a lot goes into it behind the scenes. It's beyond the music, you know. It's about, it's life changing, like, and it was, you know.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Well, that's a very big insight to it.
Brilliant.
But to sort of know that punk's going round nowadays and it's not what it used to be, I think.
Well, yeah. Have you seen my son's band?
Yeah.
What do they call them? Zero Negative.
Yes.
Like, I'm not in the band, right? They can do what they want and they can play what they want. But what annoys us is that the part of this thing, which, or the part of this group of people who call themselves punk, you know? And it's about as far away from punk as you can ever imagine, I mean, like, and that's what annoys us, because, and they can't argue with us because they weren't there originally, like, so how can that possibly argue with someone like me? I mean, they might say, well, you were only a kid, how would you know?
Aye.
But I was amongst that scene, you know, and I bought all the newspaper, all the music magazines, I bought all the records, and I read about it, and I'm obsessed with it, you know, and I do know, and I know what inspired us about it, and I know why it was so inspirational, and I mean, I just think being part of an underground scene isn't good. Like, you want to break out of that and make it better, make it bigger. That's why I can't knock people like Green Day, because a lot of people do, because they think they're a bunch of pop stars, you know. But they're only pop stars because they're famous, and that's not their fault.
No.
That's their fault for being good, is it? You know, people like them, and that's not their fault either. I mean, I'm sure they wanted to be what they were, you know. And what doesn't matter what anybody says, like, I think Eric Nidia is probably the last great punk record. I think it's brilliant, you know. I think if anyone can come up with something as good as Jesus Suburbia these days, then let me hear it, and I'll love it, because I do love that. And I've never heard a punk record since that I do, like, you know. Not a modern one, anyway. I just think it's... And again, they look great, especially on that particular album, you know. And the artwork and everything that goes with that album, it's just... They just got it right, you know. It's kind of like London Calling of, like, modern times, but it's proper punk rock.
Yeah.
To me, it's got more edge than that, you know, and it's lyrically superb, you know.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Well, I hope that insight's been interesting for all our lovely listeners out there. So next week I'll have another guest who will no doubtly have some more punk tales for us. Until next time, goodbye.